Today's episode of Expanded Perspectives is sponsored by Gaia.com. Help find your own truth by exploring perspectives you won't find in the mainstream on some of life's biggest mysteries. Whether it's grand conspiracies, breakaway societies, UFOs, ancient civilizations, lost wisdom, as well as the paranormal, all at your fingertips. Stream videos anywhere from your living room or on the go with the Gaia app, available through the App Store or Google Play, which gives you access to over 7,000 titles, all available to you with a monthly plan for only $9.95 a month. If you sign up now, your first month is only 99 cents. There are multiple plans to choose from, including a 3-month plan and an annual plan. You'll have access to incredible shows available only on Gaia, like Truth Hunter, Buzzsaw, Cosmic Disclosure, Beyond Belief, Missing Links, Hidden Origins, and Deep Space, and much, much more. Gaia is available on your Android or iPhone, Roku, Apple TV, and Amazon Fire TV. If you enjoy expanding your perspective, then you'll enjoy Gaia.com. That's GAIA.com/expanded perspectives. All one word, folks. GAIA.com/expanded perspectives. Let's start the show.
Howdy there, friends, and thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And that's right, folks, as always, sitting in studio here with me, the great beast himself, the Filio, Kyle Filson. Filio, what are you doing over there?
Oh, I'm just looking at some articles here online. Oh. Just chilling. I'm glad to be here, folks. Thanks for having me on, as usual.
That's right. I can't get rid of the Philly. I can't. If for those of you that aren't elitist, if you want to hear a crazy story that happened to Kyle and I whenever we were young teenagers, I'm talking 14, 15 years old, that had to do with the consumption of alcohol, you might want to become an elite member simply for that story. But yeah, we got a lot of feedback over that story.
Got a lot of feedback over that story and the possible show you were pitching.
Yeah. I'll go ahead and tell all y'all too, folks. I had told the elite listeners that if you like hearing stories of crazy things that have happened to Kyle and I as we've grown up, that we said if we get enough feedback that we would do a show solely on it. Just like a 1-hour show of us just telling stories of stuff that have happened to Kyle and I. Just
nothing to do with the paranormal.
Have zero to do with the paranormal. Just things that have happened to us. So if you're interested, hit us up. Let us know what y'all think. Anyway, I mean, it's just funny. And yes, thank you for everyone that contacted me and the folks we shared a few drinks with. I'm back from Las Vegas.
You survived.
David Copperfield didn't make me disappear. The giant tigers, I don't know if that's still a show out there. They didn't eat me. I did a little dancing on a stripper pole and a bus.
You did?
Yeah, I did a little bit of that in there. The cousins had rented one of those buses that go up and down the strip, and you got the stripper pole in the back. I was back there shaking what daddy gave me, boy. I was working it, all that stuff. I didn't work it too much, though. You know, I didn't want to put them all to shame.
I don't have a video of that.
There is some video of that, but I'm not letting that loose. I think my son's got some video of that.
I'm going to have to get in touch.
Right? Yeah. So, yeah, we had a really, really good time. Everything worked out. It was fun. It's not my cup of tea up there in Vegas. It's a little too rambunctious and wild and for me. Fremont Street was really fun. I saw some things that I wished I could unsee. Some people that are dressed very scantily that doesn't need to be dressed scantily. They ought to be wearing potato sacks or something. But yeah, it's a little rough. So yeah, but anyway, I'm back. Thanks so much. It was so much fun. And we're fixing to get to it. We're going to kick the tires, light the fires. Kyle, you were telling me something about my honey because I'm a big fan of honey. So what were you laying on me?
Well, I just saw this article over at Gizmodo written by Rhett Jones. It's pretty interesting. It's about a third of America's bee colonies died last year, and that's actually good news.
Wait. How can that be good news?
Yeah, you'll see why. It says bee populations around the world have been in decline for years due to a number of reasons that make it extremely difficult to fix the problem.
Too many bear.
That's one thing. Urban development, insecticides, fungicides, mm-hmm. illness, and climate change, as well as cell phones and many other factors, have been determined to be responsible for the decline in bee populations. Now, this week, the nonprofit Bee Informed Partnership in the Apiary Inspectors of America published their annual survey of 4,963 beekeepers in the United States. And it seems that we still have a problem.
I get that publication, by the way.
Do you? I bet
yes,
you do.
I'm a big fan.
But it was, they say, slightly better. It was a slightly better year for our vital pollinating friends. It says the loss of a third of the nation's honeybee colonies between April 2016 and March 2017 represented the second lowest rate of colony loss in the last 7 years.
Oh, I got you.
So it says, on average, over the last decade, about 40% of colonies were lost each year. Now, director of the survey, a guy named Dennis Van Eagelsdorp, told CBS News that it's good news in that the numbers are down, but it's certainly not a good picture. It's gone from horrible to bad. It says the U.S. government has an official goal of getting the winter bee colony losses down to only 15% annually. And this year's winter losses of 21% were the lowest since the survey began back in 2006.
I'm a big fan now. I'm liking how this is going.
Right? They say it's possible that we're getting better at addressing the problems that are facing bee populations. Several scientists believe that the new product for fighting this mite, they call the Vera Destructor, is one of the primary reasons for the more encouraging numbers this year. They say that these mites have been a key factor in what's commonly referred to as colony collapse disorder. It says this because this causes the bees, I guess, to have a deformed wing. And said that one dead colony can potentially be revived by beekeepers, but it requires extra labor and a loss of productivity. The cost incurred by beekeepers fighting colony death virus is often passed on to U.S. farmers who rely on the bees to pollinate $15 billion worth of crops each year. They say it's a difficult problem because nearby bee colonies that aren't healthy threaten the ones that are. And in order, the only way to keep healthy bees is you got to have a good environment, and so do your neighbors. And they say, unfortunately, every time we seem to make some sort of progress, it seems to be another issue that's always discovered. But it looks like we're getting better at addressing the problem. So the numbers have been declining, and last year, although quite large, is still the lowest amount since they started the survey. So, you know, maybe us battling these mites as well as the other things is actually, you know, maybe in 10 years from now, the bee colonies will be doing really well. I don't know.
Kyle, why'd the honeybee get married?
I have no idea.
Because he found his honey.
Wow. Very nice.
I'm a big fan of the bees making the rebound. You know what I'm saying? It's one of those deals, but it's a misleading because I was thinking bad news. And you're like, no, it's fine. I'm like, okay, awesome. But that's a big step up from 2002 now.
Basically, it's gone from, like you said, horrible to bad. So, but it is getting better.
Yeah. We're making improvements, and that's all that matters.
Stay positive.
We're making improvements.
You're one of the guys that the glass is half empty or half full. Right. So just let's, you know, got to think positive, people.
Well, I'm glad you're saying making improvements and glasses, because this comes from Rachel Rettner. She's a senior writer with Live Science. This is at livescience.com, folks. Extreme binge drinking is on the rise in the U.S.
Really?
Millions of Americans say they engage in extreme binge drinking.
Now, what does that mean? Does that mean, like, you know, with a funnel and beer? What is it?
Downing at least 8 to 10 drinks containing alcohol on a single occasion.
Oh.
That's what they could...
That's not that... I wouldn't consider that extreme binge drinking. I mean, if you go to a barbecue and you're there for 4 or 5 hours, 8 drinks is too many?
The judgment in your voice. Oh.
When I hear extreme binge drink, I'm thinking like 8 drinks in like an hour.
18 beers in a round of golf. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah. That's not, I mean, what's extreme about that? That's not extreme, is it?
8 to 10. I don't know what other people consider extreme, but I guess this is it. It says that this behavior appears to be on the rise in the U.S. This is from a new report. The findings are concerning because this high level of drinking is linked with, well, get this, health and safety risks.
Yeah.
No joke. It says including an increased risk of injury or even death. Oh, what gave that away? You're telling me 6 shots of Jaeger and getting behind the wheel or getting behind the bars on a motorcycle is not a good idea? Come on now. Now, it says that the study reveals that a large number of people in the United States drink at very high levels and underscores the danger associated with such extreme binge drinking. Now, this is a statement that comes from George F. Koob. Now, he's the director of the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. Says the researchers analyzed information from more than 36,000 Americans ages 18 and older who completed a survey about their alcohol consumption in 2012 and to 2013. And the researchers, they asked the participants to report the maximum number of drinks that they consumed in a single day in the past year. Now, these are alcoholic drinks only. And binge drinking was defined as, you ready, consuming 4 or more drinks on a single occasion for women, and or 5 or more on a single single occasion for men.
That's ridiculous.
That's a binge drink.
That's not binge drinking. I mean, maybe it is where this guy grew up, or I grew up. That's not even close to binge drinking.
That's,
I mean,
called,
if you go to somebody's, like, okay, it's Memorial.
It's called going to dinner.
I mean, if you go to, like, this Memorial Day, right? Yeah. You go over there to a barbecue, somebody's having a party. I mean, you're going to bring at least a 6-pack with you.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not binge drinking.
Yeah, that's just drinking a sixer.
Yeah. If now, if you drink a case when you come over, and I'm not, then you might be like, look, bro, that's a lot.
that's a lot.
But 5?
Yeah, 5 beers.
And also the duration.
In a single occasion.
I mean, if it's say it's an all-day party, and you start at like 2 p.m. and you go to 10 p.m. at night, you're telling me you can't, drinking more than 5 beers?
No, you can. You're just going to have to bear the weight of the cross of being a binge drinker.
Count me in. I'm a binge drinker.
I guess I'm a binge drinker. This trip to Vegas, I guess I'm a binge drinker. I just think it's, this also, though, is, this is surveying people that do surveys. You know what I'm saying? How many people didn't do the surveys? So it always makes me wonder these numbers. And that's kind of what I'm getting into, is these numbers, they start talking about all this. But you got to look at this like with a grain of salt. Is you're like, okay, you took a bunch of kids that were, are people that were going to do the survey. But maybe that small group, to them, that's a lot of drinks. But to the average American that doesn't have time to do a survey, doesn't care to do a survey, 5 drinks in one, like you're talking about, and is that in one day? A single occasion? Because they don't really
how long is an occasion?
Exactly. They don't really go into depth on the whole occasion. I will give them this, though. They do talk about the problems that it can have. And they do say this, and this is another, no joke. Drinking at such high levels can suppress areas of the brain that control basic life support functions, such as breathing and heart rate, thereby increasing one's risk of death. And this is a co-author from the study, Aaron White. And they're also, Aaron's the senior advisor, scientific advisor to the NIAAA, says that the risk increases further if other sedative drugs, particularly opioids or benzodiazepine,
none,
are added to the mix. So you read all this. Them publishing this is like, okay, don't drink. Wouldn't this what you'd want to publish if you're trying to get pot legalized?
Yeah.
Because that's pretty much what it's telling me right here.
I mean,
look, one way or the other, that's what it's saying. So you read all this, I'm like, yeah, no joke. If you drink too many, you drink. Now, this
you shouldn't be mixing alcohol with opioids at all.
Yeah.
I mean, your doctors and the labels, they tell you that.
Exactly.
If you're taking this, you know, if you're taking Oxycontin or Ambien or something,
yeah,
don't drink with it. No joke. You can't sit there and drink 6 drinks and be taking opioids at the same time.
Yeah,
yeah, you are looking for a cocktail of
so
death.
So you're telling not taking muscle relaxers and doing shots of Jack? You
I would
do
not.
That?
I would not
wouldn't recommend
suggest
that. Yeah,
no.
I wouldn't recommend that either. No. I just thought it was funny. I had to bring this up is in a single occasion, Kyle, if you drink more. So from now on, whenever we get together to watch the fights or we all go out to cook or we go over to Monty's house, I'm going to keep my eye on you. And if you drink more than 5 drinks, I'm going to tell them that you're binge drinking. I'm going to start tweeting it out.
There's no reason even to do the challenge. I'm totally guilty. When a typical like UFC comes on, I consume 1 to 2 drinks per fight. That's not a joke. That's real. I've done podcasts, a 3-hour podcast roundtable show where I consumed more than 5 drinks during the course of that show.
When we did the Elite Show with Micah and Nick and Lyle in here,
yeah,
I drink more than five beers sitting right here beside Lyle.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm with you. So it just be careful when you read this stuff, people. Make sure you look at like the percentage of people that were tested. Kind of look at all ways, because it is kind of tricky the way they're wording that.
You're bringing up a good point. This is the problem when you read almost any article. When it comes to a survey or comes to a scientific data, you have to really take a look at where they're pulling the data from and the structure.
The data pool.
Exactly. Check this out. This is from Discover Magazine by Eric Betts. A pretty cool article about how is Antarctica gaining or losing ice? I didn't realize this, but apparently there's been a debate going on for a long time if Antarctica is losing ice or is it gaining ice. Now, if you're not familiar with that, apparently the western side of Antarctica is melting, and that's where you see all those videos of the giant pieces of icebergs and ice sheets breaking off and falling in the ocean.
Yeah.
At the exact same time, on the eastern side of the continent, it's getting record numbers as far as snowfall.
Wait, so yet again, what we just talked about.
Exactly.
You got to watch where you're getting. So this side over here is actually growing more. So it's just shifting, basically.
Well, that's
it's
what they're
peeling
saying.
Back and showing more green on one side and more snow on the other.
Right, so these global warming people, they're picking their parts of what they want to fit their story.
Yeah.
So they're saying, look, dude, this side is melting like crazy. The oceans are going to rise. But they're saying, wait a minute, that side's melting. But this sign's actually ice is growing. So that's what the debate is. And it says for years there's been a debate about whether heavy inland snowfall on the vast East Antarctic ice sheet, Earth's largest, by the way, balances out the rapid melting in the western side. It says given enough snowfall, the continent might not yet be contributing to sea level rise. Now, most research shows that the melt rate is so high that the continent is indeed losing ice. But in 2015, a group of NASA scientists published a controversial study that found Antarctica was instead gaining ice. NASA team combined space and land-based measurements and found that so much snow was dropping in eastern Antarctica that even with drastic melting elsewhere, the continent was adding some 80 billion tons of ice annually. It says this all contradicted prominent previous findings, including reports from the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. It says the result drew global headlines and excited climate change skeptics. But despite the warnings from the study's lead author, NASA's Goddard Chief Cryospheric Scientist Jay Zwally, that's a cool name, Cryospheric Scientist.
That is a cool
who predicted cool that title. Melting would outpace increased snowfall in a decade or two. And so that's basically what they're saying is there's a group of scientists, this is a heavily debated thing. And so there's several scientists saying that it's melting on this side, it's gaining on this side. So what is it actually happening? And right now they think, from all the studying they've been doing, that it's actually in balance. So they're gaining as much ice on the eastern side of Antarctica as they are losing on the west. But they did say that it appears that those numbers are going to be changing soon, and they do think that it's going to be melting faster than it's building up. But of course, you know, anything can change. That happens all the time. So even today, even with modern technology, modern science, with satellites and all this stuff, and being by traveling there themselves and taking measurements, still doesn't seem like we really, truly know.
You're right.
It's melting over here, but it's gaining over here. That's like it's, you know, one year we'll have a drought. We had a drought here for years.
Yeah.
And there was other parts of the country that were getting lots of rainfall.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's shifted.
Yeah.
All the lakes that were dry around here, everything's full. It's
isn't
all green.
Crazy?
Same thing in California.
Cycles.
They had a huge drought. Exactly. And I think that the cycles, I mean, as much as we try to put our head around it, we don't really know.
We don't know.
Let's just say that. I don't know. I wish I would have became a cryospheric scientist, though.
Well,
that's
just
a cool name.
Simply for the title alone is what I wanted for.
Right.
It is. It's one of those things that's frustrating because we don't know.
Now, there was no mention on here about having the secret armies guarding the continent of Antarctica that wouldn't allow them to, you know, trespass there.
Over the ice wall?
Yeah. There was no articles that they couldn't fly over Antarctica. There was none of that. It doesn't bring up any mention of that. So, I don't know.
There's none. So, what you say? Maybe it's not flat?
Yeah, that's
what I'm saying. Are you questioning that? No. You're a round earth shill, aren't you?
I am. They pay me. It's not very much. I only get a check for like $27.35, I think, a month to keep the flat earth suppressed and keep putting out there that the earth is round.
That's all they pay you?
Yeah, it's not a real lucrative gig.
You're not getting lucrative?
No.
I've got you something here. We always talk about UFO shapes. Strange shapes, this, that, and the other. This comes from our homie over there at Open Minds, Roger Marsh, and he had posted this about an Arizona witness sees a UFO, describes it as six hovering discs. Now we're back to the disc shapes.
Back to the discs. Yeah. So from disc to cigar to what was it? Triangle. Oh, egg. I forgot. Egg. Eggs. Or spherical. Then triangle. Then chevron.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're back to sphere.
Yes, we're back to sphere.
So see, maybe it's different aliens. This is like just like countries. This planet, they're all triangles.
You think that's how it works?
This planet over here is egg shaped.
So they don't have a used ship dealer yet, like used car dealers. They don't have a used ship dealer where one people buy like a different car. You know what I mean? Like, no, I want that kind of car.
Well, and I think and extraterrestrial kids can identify. Like, you can identify that's clearly a Corvette or that's clearly a Mustang.
You're probably
They're
right.
Like, oh,
yeah.
Well, that's the whatever.
Yeah,
you need 11-2000 CX2 or whatever.
You need an extraterrestrial child to tell or you.
It may
what's
not have been, of course,
on.
it wouldn't be our numbers. You'd be like,
whoa.
That's the name of it. You know?
Hey, now.
Like, oh, I know exactly what that is.
It says this. An Arizona witness traveling by train through Apache County reported watching and photographing six hovering two-story objects beaming light to the ground level. Case number 83376. If you go to Open Minds, you can see the photos.
I'm looking at them.
Says the case was reopened for or reported for the witness who had the experience on April 14th of 2017. Now, here you go. It says, my mother was traveling through the Arizona desert via train on her way to Texas. She was unable to sleep due to movement of the train, and she said that she was looking out of the cabin window and saw a very bright light that became brighter as the train approached. It says that the witness saw more than one object. It says that she said that she then saw six objects hovering side by side, close enough to see that each object had two rows of windows. She described them as being two-story. She said that they were so bright and that a foggy sort of light was beaming down from the underneath of each object. Now, she attempted to photograph what she was seeing and said that she frantically reached for her cell phone in time to snap a couple of photos. I myself, she says, have seen some pretty amazing things in the sky that I can only describe as being extraterrestrial, and she was the biggest skeptic until she saw for herself. She was so excited to share this with me. She is not one to exaggerate or seek attention in any way. She's a no BS kind of lady. I know what she saw was genuine, and she asked that I share with the UFO community. Enjoy. So what do you think about that? You're looking at those photographs.
Yeah, I'm looking at
what
it.
What do you think?
Well, I can't tell that it's six individual discs. It could be just a circular pattern of lights
you know,
on the
photos
bottom of one disc.
Never come off great.
Well, that's another
thing.
Yeah,
that's a problem with your phone.
I have no idea what I'm looking at. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just lights.
That's what it looks like.
That's all it looks like. A picture of lights. You really can't tell anything of it. But let's go off of her description, okay?
Okay.
Two stories tall, had two rows of windows.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
You know, is it like a vertical plane? Is that
maybe
what
this is like an international, like when you go get on the ferry at Niagara Falls. This is like a tourist UFO or a Greyhound bus. And they're passing through and they stop by Earth on their tour.
Down in Arizona, they're just checking stuff out.
I guess. I mean, maybe.
Isn't there prettier places to go? I'm not hating on y'all state, Arizona. I'm just saying it's kind of like a desert, right?
Well, there's also mountains, alpine mountains with elk and everything like that.
Yeah,
you know, I have
true.
No idea where. But also, when it comes back to the different spacecraft, I mean, maybe there's low models and high-end models. And the guys that drive the chevrons, that's like a Maserati. They're laughing on the sphere, guys. They're like, that guy ain't got no money. He needs to get his shit together. He needs to get, you know, he's take care of business. At least he's got that cheap. He's driving the beater, right? And the guys in the triangle and chevron shape, they're like, we're balling out of control. We're intergalactic ballers. You know,
that's how it is.
Yeah,
huh?
That's like the McLaren. That's the Bugatti. That's the good model.
I got you. Okay.
I'm just theorizing.
I don't know. I like your theory.
It's either several aliens from several different planets, and each one has its own shape, or those are different models of the same. They're all the same alien, but they just have different models of craft.
That maybe. Oh,
what
I like.
You saw. This one was the large. It's like a double decker bus. It's got the tourist. You know where you go and you drive down the streets and you know you drive down Broadway.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh yeah, right here. There's Macy's and you know everybody's taking the pictures and look at. That's what this is. They ferried them in here. They come to Arizona. They're letting them look around.
I like your theories.
Yeah, right.
I think you need to write a blog on these theories. I like the way you're going with this.
Well, it sounds good, but I'll probably get all kinds of people hating and trolling on me.
Perfect, perfect explanation. Folks, when we come back from break, I'm going to talk about a lesser known humanoid we're going to kind of dive into that I think you're going to enjoy. I really enjoyed looking into this, writing this whole thing up, drawing this thing up. It's going to be pretty fun. It's something that's going to make you scratch your head. When we get back from the break, folks, we're going to be discussing the Black Flash. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we are back, and Kyle is just now launching his blog about customizing extraterrestrial craft. He's going to try to get in on the pinstriping with Kafka here. Get your Steve Kafka pinstriping kit out.
And you're do raps, work, too.
Do raps and pinstriping and gold leaf lettering Kafka. Kafka style. Yeah, like I had alluded to, folks, this is something that I can't even really say that I knew hardly anything about until I stumbled across this while looking at things online, reading books, and just pretty much entertaining myself while on the trip to Vegas. So I'm going to bring this out for us to just discuss. This is just going to be a good open discussion about things that we all kind of find, you know, intriguing and enjoy. Now, in the past, Kyle and I have covered many a strange character or humanoid or whatever you'd like to call it. A couple of these being real fan favorites. The first, of course, is the so-called English folklore entity of the Victorian era of 1837. Yep, y'all guessed it. The Spring-Heeled Jack.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, it was first spotted in October of 1837 by young Mary Stevens. And she claimed that this humanoid leapt from the darkness, grabbing her arm, and all the while trying to kiss her and tear away at her clothes with its claws. And after escaping this monster, she said it felt cold and clammy like a corpse. And then the next day, witnesses claimed that he escaped a search party by leaping over a 9-foot fence. Well, the next wild man we covered was Kyle's favorite. The Mad Gasser of Mattoon.
Yeah, I like that one.
Also referred to as Frizz, or the Phantom Anesthetist, the Mad Gasser, the Anesthetic Prowler. Except this humanoid wasn't in Europe, but here in the U.S. There was a series, of course, of these apparent gas attacks that occurred there in Virginia in the early 1930s and in Mattoon, Illinois in the mid-40s. Now, they described the gasser as being tall, a thin man dressed in dark clothing, wearing a tight-fitting cap. Not the appearance of the Spring-Heeled Jack, really. Now, of course, the first recorded Mad Gasser incident occurred there in Virginia, and that's when they started gassing the family, 1933, December 22nd to February 34, at the home of Cal Huffman there, and that they were reported three attacks over the course of a single night. You know, and from this is Miss Huffman was reported smelling that unusual odor. She started getting sick. The odor caused nausea about a half hour later. That's whenever Cal called the police. And a third attack, they said, was around 1 a.m. And this had the whole house. All eight members of the family were affected. And even a guest staying at the house, Ashby Henderson, affected also.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's strange. That was odd. Nobody ever really knows. You know, we don't know if that was. We're always assuming it was a human presence, that it wasn't a type of humanoid or an extraterrestrial, but we don't know. You know, it's never been nailed down 100%. But another odd humanoid experience for sure. But today, I'm discussing a lesser-known troublemaker. Now, let me set the mood for this story for y'all. And in order for me to do that, we have to take ourselves back in time to America in 1938. Orson Welles' radio adaptation of The War of the Worlds is broadcast at this time, causing mass panic in the eastern U.S. It was on the Mercury Theater on the radio air show on October 30th of 1938. Around the same time of year, we have Seabiscuit and War Admiral, and they actually have the long-awaited race between the two to see which is the best horse. And of course, Seabiscuit beat War Admiral. Now, to just a touch base on the whole thing in 1938, I'm going to give you the cost of living from 1938. The average cost of a new home back then was $3,900. $3,900. The average wages per year was $1,730. The cost of a gallon of gas was a mere 10 cents. Now, elsewhere in the world, during March of 1938, Nazi Germany forcibly marched into Austria, annexed it in. That's around the time the persecution of the Jews began. Of the Germans? There were also some freak waves there in Sydney, Australia, along Bondi Beach, that dragged roughly 300 people out to sea. Popular films at the time, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Still a good show. Popular birthdays of people that we know of now. Evel Knievel was born October 1938. And the gambler himself, Kenny Rogers, born in Houston, Texas, on August 21st. Another cool little tidbit was Action Comics actually issued the very first Superman comic in 1938. So with the mood lighting set and the music turned down low, let's dive in. This all starts in Provincetown, Massachusetts, with terrified and crying children. See, different children around town would return home from school in the evenings, and they would share tales with their mother and father of an unbelievable encounter. They would all report near the same thing. Something big and growling at them from the woods along the roadsides on their way home. Then out of nowhere, this large black thing would appear and then take off in a flash. The parents would do what any good parent would, sit and hold their child and reassure them it was nothing, and all just a case of mistaking maybe a large dog or something for the monster. The love the parents gave might come with a treat or a chuckle, and then it was forgotten. Forgotten by everyone but the children who had experienced the encounter. No matter how hard they tried, they couldn't seem to convince anyone that it was the truth. And being at the northern tip of Cape Cod, Massachusetts, and the site of the Mayflower's Landing, many people vacationed there, and the summers were full of laughing and fun. But back in those days, by the time Labor Day rolled around, the tourist season ended sharply on that day, and the town would quickly go back to its quiet and quaint ways. By October, the whole town was back to normal. And that's when the story takes a darker turn. On one October night, a Miss Maria Costa was walking home and didn't have a care in the world. She strolled with the light step that only a young person has, one not yet weighed down by the burdens of life. As she reached town hall, she let her hands glide along the tops of the well-kept shrubs, making her hand like a surfer riding the smooth rolling waves of her home. Without provocation, from out of the bushes, an inhumanly and gangly tall figure, dressed in all black, jumped out in front of her, its eyes glowing in intense blue light. Its ears were big and silver. An unknown humanoid that had the ability to jump like a gazelle. Maria ran to a near coffee shop, screaming and rambling incoherently. After finally calming down, she told her story to some of the patrons, and several men from the restaurant decided to check it out and ran down Commercial Street looking for the thing. But they found nothing. The police chuckled after taking her statement, believing it was nothing more than a young girl who had become scared of the dark on her walk home. But over the next week, several more residents reported being scared to death by this tall, beastly creature appearing out of nowhere in the night right in front of them as they walked through town. Some called it the Provincetown Phantom. Some would refer to it later on as the Devil from the Dunes. Some even referred to it as, and the name that it would get stuck with, as the Black Flash, because it would wear a long hooded black cape and it had the superhuman ability to run so fast and bound away. Now the reports grew very rapidly of townspeople being terrified by the Black Flash. So the police, of course, had to begin an investigation. couples walking home from town or just out for a stroll would report seeing this large black humanoid that moved so fast. Not only were the sightings increasing, but also calls to the police department. They would start lending more and more credibility to the idea that the police were onto something and that there was some sort of paranormal being now involved. You see, a call would come in from the west end of town that the black flash had just ran through their backyard. Received a call that something had jumped into the backyard and ran across on Tremont Street. And then in no more than a minute or so later, there would be another call would receive from a home across town on another street and would be screaming for the police to come quickly that the flash was on the east side of town now. Now, such a long distance covered in a matter of mere seconds made them believe that it was clearly not human. No human being could cover that much distance in that short a time. As would be the case in future sightings, of course, the flash would disappear into the night with large leaps and bounds, much like the Spring Hill Jack that we've reported on. The sightings finally escalated one evening with Mr. Charles Farley, whom had been waiting for his chance to put an end to this BS once and for all. See, Charles is a no-nonsense, blue-collar kind of guy, hard-working man. He didn't like the idea of his town not being safe for the people and not getting the results from the police that he had hoped for. Decided that, well, he'll take matters into his own hand. So one evening, he grabbed up his 12-gauge shotgun, slipped out into the darkness, and decided to wait where he had heard most reports of people seeing the black flash. Well, he did this for several nights. The first few nights, like normal, nothing happened. And about the third night, he got his chance. During one of the flash's runs through town, it's when he happened to cross paths with the armed Mr. Farley. Now, Charles said, when he and the creature made eye contact, that the creature didn't seem surprised or even worried as he stepped out with his shotgun. Charles says that he leveled off and he gave the flash both barrels. And in a blinding flash and deafening roar, the shotgun spewed forth the justice that Charles was looking for. But it was not met with the outcome that he was looking for. When Charles' eyes had finally adjusted from the muzzle flash in the darkness, he saw the creature still standing there. Charles said that the creature merely laughed at him, turned, and leapt over an 8-foot-tall fence and disappeared. But that wasn't the flash's only run-in with people. In fact, there were more injuries to come. There was at least 2 cases that were reported that were in injuries. But none were really severe in their nature. The first report came to the police from a fellow named George Lobos. And he had claimed that he had come face to face with this thing one evening and that his fight or flight kicked in and took a jab at it. George said that with the skill of a trained fighter, this thing slipped its head to the side and caught his punch. And then, with an unbelievable inhuman force, squeezed his hand so violently that it brought him to the ground. There's even a few reports that claim that George's hand was broken during this. Now, in the second case, there was a man who identified only as Charlie, claimed that the creature had just cleared a 9-foot fence and dropped down behind him when it turned with blinding speed and slapped him across the chest so hard that it slammed him to the ground. Now, one night, of course, in 1945, that's right, folks, 1945, from 1938 to 1945, interactions and sightings of this creature continued. In 1945, police had received several complaints of the creature, or the phantom, if you will, spotted in a schoolyard there. So 5 officers responded there, and they all 5 reported seeing what they described as the Phantom. And when the officers attempted to corner this monster against the schoolhouse, that it started laughing, ran along the side of the school, and jumped over a 10-foot fence. One jump. Not jump and grab the top and pull yourself over, folks. No, they reported it jumped with the ease of if you would jump up a stair. Over the top and into the night. Now, one of the officers had the opinion that the suspect may have been a pole vaulter due to his abilities to fly through the air like that and be under control. Now, oddly enough, the Black Flash was actually defeated by a small group of small children. Brothers and sisters, Eleanor, Louis, Al, and Joey Gennard were playing outside their family home one cool, foggy December morning on Standish Street. And they claimed that they looked out through the fog and they saw the Flash on a nearby hill, peeking over the top, watching them. Well, like any child would, and especially after growing up hearing all these stories, they scattered. They were terrified. They had to get back to the house. As they ran back to the house, they could hear this creature gaining on them. It followed them all the way home. The kids darted in the room, slammed the doors, locked it, and the Flash grabs the doors and starts rattling them, shaking them. Louie gets hot water and goes upstairs to the window above the door, has a bucket of hot water, and dumps it out on top of the Black Flash. It hits the Phantom. All they can hear is a loud gasping sound. The Phantom turns, runs back the way he came. And that was the last time anyone saw this creature. It was gone. From 1938 to 1945, he was defeated, folks. Not with a 12-gauge shotgun. Not by a punch to the face. Not by police. He was defeated with a bucket of hot water dumped on him by small children. Now, our friend and longtime listener, Mr. Theo Pomans, wrote a wonderful article on this subject at blogs.fortiana.org. And I'm going to use a little part of it here where he touches on an interesting idea. Author Robert Ellis Cahill wrote New England's Mad and Mysterious Men in 1984. And as Cahill learned, an invention of some bored Provincetown men. Cahill was told by Francis Marshall, who became Provincetown's police chief in 1959. Marshall said that he knew who the Black Flash was, but he refused to identify the culprit. And here's a quote. It says, "I will tell you this, though. The Black Flash wasn't just one person. He was four men who sometimes played the part alone and sometimes together. Two are dead now, but the others have a hell of a time when they get together, reminiscing about the times they scared the hell out of their friends and neighbors in Provincetown. Be that as it may, but the original source and the Provincetown Advocate already mentions the uncanny agility of the Black Flash, grabbing women, jumping over 10-foot hedges with no trouble at all, chair springs on his feet is the explanation." I want to leave y'all with just one more thing to think about. I've discussed this before and we've heard several like it in the past. This took place in 1879 in Shropshire, England. We've talked about these before on the show. This is what happened. A man was driving his horse cart across a bridge when a horrible black humanoid with huge shining eyes jumped out of the trees and landed on the horse's back. He tried to push the creature off, but it would not budge, and the whip seemed to go through it. The horse panicked and went into a gallop, with the creature clinging to it. The creature eventually disappeared, and the man arrived at his home in a state of shock. Does this sound like an athletic guy? with chair springs on his feet.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Cam, that's a fascinating story. I've never heard of the Black Flash, and I wonder why I've never heard of it.
I think because there's a few of these stories and these sightings with it, but it's all basically the same thing, is they report, some people report it almost animalistic, some people report it as the Phantom, hooded with the long cloak, and it's running, you know, as it's making its way, things like that. Which, yet again, not so much the Mad Gasser, more the Spring Hill Jack, but not the claws and all this. But they can hear it gasp, they can hear it growl, they can hear it laugh.
Right.
Okay. It is odd. I don't know how I feel about them. Say, okay, it's four men. Okay, it's four men. But if there's truly the estimation of the fences are correct, how are you going to run smoothly with chair springs on your feet? And the reason I bring that up is this.
Not fast.
If you could legitimately do that, we would be using that now instead of what we use now as far as in shoes, anything like that. If you wanted to run and jump and have fun, look, they build those, what are those things? You can actually buy those legs. People can put on almost like sheetrock stilts, and they do the front flips in them, and they do all that stuff in them, things like that. We've just now had to design that. If it was as simple as chair springs or like a bed spring or something, or any kind of coil spring, why would we design all that if those springs worked that well in 1938?
Right. You're 100% right. That's the thing with this story is some of the sightings sound like, yeah, probably could have been a man.
Yeah.
Or these four guys. But then some of them were beyond belief. You're right. It's like
12-gauge shotgun blast.
Doesn't do nothing to him.
He laughs.
Uh-huh.
He laughs. The police officers are there. One hop. Talks about pushing off with one foot like he would jump up on top of a stair. Clears a 10-foot fence. Not jumps and grabs it and pulls over. Clears it.
Yeah, clears it.
Clears it. It's very odd. What's odd to me is this, though, is for months, it was only being seen by children.
Yeah. And yet they were the ones that were able to defeat it.
Yeah, and they were exactly right. That's the thing. They were only, school children were the only ones that saw it. The parents didn't see it for the longest time until it went after that younger girl. And then that, you know, but that's when they started taking the report seriously. But I guess that's whenever it finally came to the point of where I'm going to grab somebody. That's kind of the way the story goes, is the rest of the time it was just they heard it in the brush, they saw it, they would see it running, see it moving, and then it kind of built up its, what, okay. Going through my Rolodex of ridiculousness, all the stuff that we've covered, right? All the men in black, the hat men, the grinning man, all of these shadow beings, all of this stuff, it doesn't fit into the box. This is something else you have to add in, because everybody that's listening to the show, you know, we all do this. You want to use everything that you've learned in the past to explain something new that you've just now heard of. Okay, I can, but it doesn't work because like you said, some of it seems, you know, supernatural. Some of it seems completely human. Some of it seems almost animal-like. None of it falls into place smoothly.
Right.
None of it. The whole thing. And I don't know, like I said, look, I can't get... what makes me keep thinking about it, keep going back to these things is, you know, we had Lon on not long ago, and Lon was talking about that Calumet Park there in Chicago and all the sightings. There's been a new sighting there.
I saw that.
Of a large black flying man that took place. And I'll read it to you right quick to bump. This is, like I said, this is what keeps my wheels turning about these sightings. I'm going to read you what happened. Said, I just received a telephone call from a witness in Calumet Park in the neighborhood of Chicago. This is what it says. The woman and her boyfriend noticed a large black figure above a group of trees in the vicinity of 127th and Ashland Avenue at approximately 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, May 27th. The witness states this, that they first thought that it was a black helicopter because of the size, though the distance was not determined. The object then rose further in the sky and became apparent that it was a large human-like being with wings. They described it as black in color, and it was flying without moving its wings. They were shocked at the size as it silhouetted itself across the moon, which was visible in the late clear evening. There was still considerable light, but too dark to get a discernible video or photograph with their cell phone.
None.
It says, though there was an attempt to capture the evidence, they tried. So they determined that it was not a plane or a glider, but a living being of unknown origin. And the description by the woman was that it looked like a large black flying man with wings. Says the woman, who did disclose her name to me, was disturbed by this encounter. And then she had searched the internet, and that's when she started searching the internet and all this, she instantly found Lawns, Phantoms, and Monsters right then. And I'm sure she got on, you know, black human flying humanoid thing and then Calmet Park and the whole deal. So he's actually checking in the whole thing, and those people are going to start doing some more looking. You know, they plan to keep an eye out for this whole thing. So this stuff is going on. It didn't just pass back down there. It doesn't line up the same. That's what makes me feel like when you see this and what I discussed back in England whenever they attacked the horse, and then what we've discussed up there, it doesn't feel like people. It feels like somebody took, they took ownership of what was going on. Because my thing is, I would have quit doing it, not when the kids dumped hot water on me, years before when a guy fired a 12-gauge shotgun at me. I'd be like, you know what, I'm done.
Yeah, if it was a prank.
Exactly. If it was only a prank. You're like, I'm out. But this doesn't feel like it's a prank. And it feels like there's a lot more of these. I often wonder this. How many people have these sightings and never come forward? Never check the internet, never anything?
I think it happens all the time.
I think there's
not all the time, but you know, more often than not.
More than we give it credit to. So it just makes me wonder. So folks, anybody involved in the whole humanoid thing, keep your eyes peeled, man.
That's right.
Keep them peeled, because I don't know what's going on. But the black flashes, if anybody's got any more news on, if y'all have got any friends or family that lived out there, grew up in that time, send it to us. ExpandedPerspectives@yahoo.com. I would love to read some more stories about the black flash.
Yeah, I would
stuff
too.
That's interactions that happened to people, and if they know anything for sure that was going on.
I haven't heard about it until you brought it up today. So
it's crazy, right?
Cool. Man, there seems to be all types of new movies and stuff coming out, man. And it's really been a really good weekend. John Wick 2 is out. We watched that. The new season of Twin Peaks is out. What else is out? Bloodline.
Yep.
Third series of Bloodline is out.
I went to the movies this weekend.
I have not seen Alien Covenant, but I know that you did.
I went and saw Alien Covenant, and also went and saw this weekend the new Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, how was that?
If you like the originals, all of them, you'll like this. This is all part along the same thing.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's a fun time, but I still like Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is one of the best ones I've seen this year, and I'm a big fan of Alien Covenant.
Well, if you like to watch things like that and you're into the stuff we talk about, don't forget about our sponsors, Gaia. That's G-A-I-A. You can go over there. That's a video streaming service. They have over 7,000 titles, and they're continually adding new ones there all the time. Recently, me and Cam got hooked on this new series over there called Ancient Advanced Technology with David Hatcher Childress. I love David, and this is a 5-part series, and he goes to different parts, like the first one's in Egypt, and then he goes to Peru and Bolivia, Central America, Mexico, and the American Southwest, as well as the Nazca area of Central Peru.
I love that one.
Me too, man, and I like that he's showing this ancient advanced technology that some of the carving stuff, it looks like it was done with lasers. There's tool marks where somebody slipped. It looked like they had power tools. And I'm not trying to say, and neither is he, that this is anything to do with aliens or ancient aliens or extraterrestrials, but it does point a finger to look somewhere in history, our history. It looks like people were advanced.
A little more advanced.
Far more advanced than what we give them credit to be. And I love that series. There's all kinds of cool series over there, as well as films and documentaries and self-help, yoga and all that. But you got to go to Gaia, that's GAIA.com/expandedperspectives. That's all one word, GAIA.com/expandedperspectives. And you can sign up. They have a monthly plan, I think a quarterly plan, and an annual plan. And if you sign up now, your first month is only 99 cents. Also, our proud sponsor, Dollar Shave Club.
Oh, dude, I love it. I can't get enough of. Look, folks, what's more annoying? Honestly, what's more annoying than you go in there to buy your razors and you got to go find the dude with the key to open up and give you replacement blades? They keep it locked up like it's gold. You know, like you're going to go in there just to rob them for razors. Don't go through all that hassle. It's something you use every day. It's something your wife will use every day. Your boyfriend will use every day. Just do the right thing. Make the smart choice. The smart choice is Dollar Shave Club. You want an awesome life hack? I'm giving it to you. Super duper easy. Get your razors, get your butter. Folks, for a limited time, like I've told you before, the new members get their first month of the Executive Razor and a tube of my favorite stuff ever, Dr. Carver's Shave Butter, for only $5, and that's free shipping. Now, of course, after that, the razors and all, it's going to go up and all this stuff. But in your first month's box, you'll get this weighted handle. Now, I say weight, I mean, it's not a little cheap plastic one. It is a heavy handle. You'll get the full cassette of four cartridges and the shave butter. Now, after the first month, your replacement cartridges come every month at the regular price. There's no hidden fees. There's no commitments. Cancel anytime you want to. If you try it out, you don't like it, you're done with it. That's it. But I will promise you this, you will like it. It's my favorite thing. I shave my head. I have to shave it all the time to keep it going. It's my favorite thing. The butter, the whole deal. I can't get enough of it. Go to dollarshaveclub.com/expanded to claim that offer. dollarshaveclub.com/expanded. Get your first month and the butter for only $5.
That's right. If you have a story of your own you'd like to share with the show, don't forget, you can send that to expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 817-945-3828. And you can follow us on all forms of social media. Also, if you'd like to help out the show, don't forget, write us a review on iTunes. We're at 475 in America. Let's get that thing to 500 people. Write us some reviews.
Yeah, come on.
It really helps out the show, especially for new listeners, people that are searching iTunes and things like that, trying to find another paranormal show to listen to. The more ratings and reviews we have, the quicker that comes up in the top of their search list. So if you want to help us out and do us a solid, write us a review. It'd really help out. Cam, what do you got planned for your short week?
Man, oh man, I don't know. With the weather, looks like we're going to have some rain coming through, this, that, and the other. So it's gonna make it a little bit of a tussle, a little bit of a hassle. So I really don't know what I've got going on, but I do know this, that I'm planning a trip down the Brazos River with my son. Him and I are going to go spend about 2 days overnighting down that river. So like I told you, I've ordered me a hammock. So I'm going to start hammock camping down the river, doing all this stuff. So I'm ready to go do all that. So that's probably what I'll be working on, is getting all that stuff squared away.
Yeah, but we lost another one. Looks like Greg Almond has passed away.
Midnight Rider. Rest easy, my friend.
Right, and Roger Moore.
007, baby.
Man.
Sir Roger Moore.
That's true. He was a knight.
That's right. Well, show him the respect, sir.
And a respect to all those who served us in the military, especially on this Memorial Day. Everybody have a good week out there. Stay safe. Be careful. Work hard. Play hard. We'll be speaking to you elite members on Thursday. For everybody else, we'll talk to you again next Monday. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.
Let's go!